It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on this, I guess it's the second Tuesday of September 2018. It's the 11th day of September 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. If you're listening to this in, like, delay, podcast, whatever, and you think, gosh, I'd love to listen to that program live someday. Well, what you do is you go to HeadOn.live during the hours in which this program is live, namely, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And, if you're on a regular browser, it should just start playing the minute you fire up HeadOn.live. You'll have to play it, I think, if you're on a mobile device or something like that. You can also get the program at TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, Roku devices. Goodness gracious, we try to be as ubiquitous as we possibly can. Yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and the first thing we do with every program is we extend thanks to the happy, merry little band that helped keep the program on the air, our subscribers. We thank everybody else as the contributions roll in during the program, but the subscribers get pride of place at the beginning of the program because, well, they may not be listening. Thank you very kindly to our anonymous friend who is literally a rocket scientist. Thank you very kindly to Matthew. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you very much indeed to Mary Bell in Kansas. Thank you, Mary Bell. Thank you very kindly to Christopher in Oregon. Christopher shows up on the front porch every now and then. Thank you very kindly to Brendan, also in Oregon. Thank you very much indeed to John in Maryland. Thank you, John. Thank you to Tony in Chico, one of our subscribers of longest standing. Thank you, Tony. And thank you to Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you, Paul, for being part of the merry band that helps keep the horn on the air. And so where do we find ourselves this lovely Tuesday evening? Okay, it's cloudy here, but, you know, whatever. Last night was a $269 goose egg, so we'll add $269 to $200, and that means we've got a $469 fundraising deficit this evening that it would be nice if we could knock down considerably before we're unable to pay bills. Because this is a listener supported program. We are not going to deliver you to the tender mercies of any advertisers, anybody who wants you to buy a radio or a steel building or some wood floors made with wood harvested from, say, some tormented nation in the South Pacific or anything like that. Nope, absolutely not. That just doesn't happen here. Instead, we ask for folks to contribute $10 a month, and that works out to something like, less than 20% of a cup of coffee or something per day. In other words, cheap. dirt cheap. And thanks to our buddy of longstanding, Frank, for signing up over at Patreon today. Thank you, Frank. Thank you very kindly. And so, we got $469 to raise. And hopefully, that will square away. Boy, it sure would be nice. Just because it makes doing all this ever so much easier when you're not, you know, sweating everything. Scott in San Diego says, regarding horn availability, I'm fine with Ubiquiti. I just want to know if folks everywhere are able to hear it. Let's see, I think I can scrounge up a ding for that. Yeah, there it was. Now, that was funny. That was good. Thank you, Scott. Over at headon.live, there's a PayPal interface and a Patreon interface. Patreon, if you jump in on Patreon, you won't even be charged till the first of next month, some 19 days away. Okay. Where to begin? Well, got a couple of emails to start with. It's an anniversary day, of course. It's the 11th day of September. I will note from the outset that on this day I always remember our dear friend Maura. Maura, who lived and worked there in Lower Manhattan on the day of the attacks, and whose name appears on no wall, and whose name is not read in some solemn cadence, whose name is not recognized as being a victim of 9/11, and yet she surely was. She breathed that filth, and it cost her her life. And one of the last things she did was to call this program from her hospital room. And as a consequence, she loved this community dearly, because in her illness after September 11th, 2001, this community became like family to her. And so she said goodbye to us. And so I think of her each and every one of these days, these anniversaries. And what we're going to find out moving forward is that more people will have died from the toxic particulate pollutants that fouled the air as the buildings came down. More people will have died from that pretty soon, if not already, than died in the actual attacks themselves. It's sort of like Agent Orange that way. And sort of like Agent Orange in the degree of neglect to which it has been subjected. Because there's never going to be a wall with the names of the people whose lungs and hearts and brains and every other part of the human system was destroyed by those toxic particulates. Because if there was such a memorial, we might start asking questions about about other people who died similarly. I know, but it's September 11th, so it's hard to be merry and wacky and zany on this day. And I, of course, am in Appalachia. And the equivalent of a 9/11 attack occurs here about every 3 years. We lose about 1,000 people a year in West Virginia's, and we're just talking about West Virginia. We're not talking about Kentucky. We're not talking about Virginia. We're not talking about Tennessee. But just in West Virginia's mountaintop removal counties, we have 1,000 excess deaths every year. 1,000 people die who would not have died except for their exposure to the toxins that are generated by the coal industry in destroying southern Appalachia for shitty little six-inch seams of coal and massive corporate profits that are then, but once they are safely squared away, are made permanent via things like corporate bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a reality. And nobody rings a bell one at a time for dead hillbillies. And nobody steps to a microphone and reads one name and somebody else steps and steps aside so somebody else can come up and read one name. Because hillbillies in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone die in ignominy. It's almost as though they were a mominish. In fact, they are. And so if we took greater note of those who have died from the toxic air pollution that resulted in the wake of the attacks of September 11th in New York, like I said, we might have to start paying attention to the other people that we ignore altogether 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. It's worth pondering. And it wouldn't just be Appalachia. It's wherever massive blasting is engaged in on a long-term basis. And that extends beyond Appalachia. I had a note to begin the program from Ron in Raleigh. Subject line, September 11th. Today we observe the 17th anniversary of the terrorist attack in Manhattan. I would like to observe another September 11th anniversary. This is the day in 1973 that the Chilean military, with the connivance of Henry Kissinger, who still isn't dead, and the United States government overthrew and murdered the democratically elected leader of Chile, Salvador Allende, and installed the murderous Augusto Pinochet. This follows a pattern of American policy, having overthrown the democratically elected prime minister of Iran 20 years earlier and installing the murderous Reza Pahlavi, who murdered and tortured his citizens. After September 11th, the United States has gone and done a wrong-headed path of regime change and unending war, trying to impose our will all over the world. Americans, I believe, think that no matter what we do, we are righteous, and no matter who we kill, we are in the right. At some point, these chickens will once again come home to roost. And it may not happen next year, or the year after that. I heard someone say earlier today that it will never happen again. Never is a very, very, very long time. And the people whose weddings we have bombed in retribution for 9/11... the children we have buried in the rubble, well, their aunts and uncles, fathers, mothers, brothers, sisters, neighbors have long, long, long memories. And I think to throw a word like never around is rather irresponsible. But the day must be marked. It must be noted. I can tell you that I'm not pumping my fist today, but the tackiest man on planet Earth, the most disrespectful man on planet Earth, possibly the worst human being on planet Earth, granted it's a competition with him and his trainer and owner, Vlad, and Kim Jong bad golf pants, maybe various and sundry religious maniacs in Western Asia, but Donald Trump. That's right. They didn't want him in Manhattan making any speeches because the people in Manhattan would have probably booed, thrown rotten vegetables, eggs, whatever they could get their hands on, because they remember the behavior of Donald J. fucking Trump on September 11th, 2001. They remember how Hillary Clinton went down into the disaster zone to see if there was anything she could do to help, to see if there was any resources that she could help to marshal. While Donald Trump stood got on the phone and bragged to a radio station that since the World Trade Center buildings had come down, he was now the proud owner of the tallest building in Manhattan. This, of course, was also a lie, because another nearby building was still taller than his, the crummy piece of crap building. Later, he would brag that he watched, or at least claim that he watched the buildings come down from over in New Jersey, where thousands, he said, cheered the demolition of the buildings. This, too, was a lie, and it was a road, it was a milepost on his road of hatred of all people of Muslim background. So there was plenty of reason for Donald Trump not to go to New York today. He is despised in his native city. He is loathed. He is detested. So instead, they sent him out to Shanksville, PA, where popular myth has it that passengers aboard a plane, aboard one of the aircraft that was hijacked, caused the plane to crash while attempting to subdue the hijackers. That's how the story goes. And so they sent him out to Shanksville to deliver whatever passed for remarks. And as he walked off Air Force One, there were people there to greet him. He is not as despised in rural Pennsylvania as he is in his native New York City. And he greeted his followers with that overbite, juvenile, middle school, face squinty, weird thing he does, and pumping both fists into the air. That's how he remembered the people whom we deem heroes who brought down that flight in a field in rural Pennsylvania. One person responding to his behavior was an actress by the name of Elizabeth West, an actor, not actress. I don't think we have to gender the acting profession anymore. We are almost at the end of the second decade of the 21st century. An actor by the name of Elizabeth West said, "Can you imagine having so little sense of decorum, sensitivity, self-awareness that your first instinct upon arriving for an incredibly solemn ceremony is to act as if you're at one of your rallies?" Andrew Lastner, the executive producer of The Ellen Show, said he can't even take 9/11 off from being a colossal schmuck. Then as he toured the memorial to the 40 victims of Flight 93, he turned to the cameras and gave a big thumbs up sign. I guess we should just be grateful that he didn't give the white power salute that his assistant, Zena Bash, has made such a production of late. We have to take our victories where we can find them. He didn't claim that he would have fought the terrorists better. He didn't claim that he would have personally commandeered the airplane and flown it to safety had he been aboard Flight 93. I'm sure he was thinking about it, though, but he called the people on Flight 93 a band of brave patriots who would never, ever submit to tyranny. How odd for a man to say that who lately has ordered his attorney general to launch a criminal investigation of an unknown person who said unkind things about him. Lèse Majesté. We've talked about that concept in the past. And given half a chance, this two-bit, tin-horn, tin-pot, crackpot dictator wannabe would bring it, would bring it quite into fashion. So, yeah, that was his September 11th, 2018. He also tweeted, September 11th, 2018, 17 years, wow. I'm sorry, the tweet said, 17 years since September 11th. And didn't even rate a wow. He sent out a tweet about what a studly he-man Rudy Giuliani was on 9/11. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't the first thing on his mind. No, not by a long shot. He's still sweating bullets about the Mueller investigation. And that's what he was tweeting about. So, that. And one thing to add to all of this. On this particular day, and since my mind... Oh, let's don't forget that. Ron and Raleigh points out, don't forget, Bob. Don't forget that the grifter-in-chief managed to grift $150,000 worth of recovery funds that were supposed to go to small businesses that suffered damage during the September 11th attacks. None of his property suffered any damage at all. Have I said how much I hate this son of a bitch? Says Ron in Raleigh. You have now. But yeah, grifter's gonna grift, and he grifted 150 large, needed by other people, and I guess they went wanting. But there's one other story that bears mentioning, and it's current. There was brief mention of this during the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings, but not nearly to the extent that it should have been homed in on. Homed, H-O-M-E, not H-O-N-E, homed in on. I'm loving my new dictionary. I really, really am. Brett Kavanaugh was in the Bush administration in and about and after September 11th, 2001. He was associate White House counsel. And he did everything in his power to try to keep people from getting the relief that they needed for as long as they needed. People who had suffered losses, not just financial losses, but the losses of their health, their well-being, and the extension, and had their lives curtailed. Brett Kavanaugh worked hammer and tongs to limit compensation to $500,000. Fortunately, there were people who pushed back against him, Republicans and Democrats. But he didn't waste any time because he was writing about it as early as October 14th, 2001. He wrote to Bush aide Kristen Silverberg on that date that three aspects of our proposal were being questioned, including a $500,000 cap, because you know how it is with a Republican. They don't want anybody to get anything because they're afraid that that means that's something that they won't get. But here's the reality. If your ability to breathe, and thus your ability to remain a going concern on this little blue-green marble time machine hurtling in its elliptical orbit, helical orbit through the universe, if your ability to breathe and live was sharply curtailed, $500,000 doesn't even touch it. Not by a long shot. Barely even covers the medical expenses. The hospital trips. I think of Maura. She had multiple trips to the hospital trying to stay alive after that day. And Brett Kavanaugh was there trying to make sure that he clawed back as much as he possibly could from people like our friend Maura. As it turned out, the payments ranged anywhere from $220,000 to up to $7.1 million. The average payout was $1.8 million. In other words, let's see, more than three times what Brett Kavanaugh had said that they deserved to have. The $500,000, of course, was 2.5 times the baseball ticket debt that Brett Kavanaugh was racking up, even probably at that time. Were the Nationals up and running in 2001? Well, whenever they got up and running, Brett Kavanaugh ran him. Yeah, you get the idea. Hundreds of thousands for baseball tickets. But the people whose lives were stolen from them, largely as a result of the neglect that that administration engaged in at that time, well, they just needed to piss off. And of course, that's another aspect of the hagiography of 9/11 that has gone the way of all flesh in the intervening years. I saw an exclusive timeline based upon quotes from people who were around George W. Bush during that day, describing the chaos and the so-called fog of war, what they knew and what they didn't know. There was no mention of him reading My Pet Goat Upside Down or anything. That's down the memory hole. But also down the memory hole is the outcome of September 11th. Gone from the account was any mention of how Bush immediately started looking for a reason to blame Saddam Hussein when the account that I read made it abundantly clear that people like Andrew Card and members of the intelligence community immediately looked up and said, well, this is pretty clearly the work of Osama bin Laden. But no, the dirtiest and bloodiest outgrowth of that nightmare day was what we would go on to make of it. A cheap and tawdry excuse to invade two countries that had one country that had only tangential association with the attack, and another country that had none whatsoever. And so if there's any, I realize that September 11th is probably triggering for a lot of people, particularly people in New York City. But it also has its own triggering aspects far, far away from New York City. Things that we only think about when we drive across a nondescript highway bridge named for some poor kid from Appalachia who participated in the poverty draft and found himself getting blown to bits somewhere in Iraq, where we had no business being, and in the attack upon which we managed to destabilize the region, and we're dealing with that unto this very day. But Brett Kavanaugh had a hand in trying to screw people in the aftermath of those attacks. And it's another not-so-subtle reminder that the likes of him have no business on the Supreme Court of the United States. And a reminder that the guy who appointed him has no business appointing anyone to anything until such time as we have appropriate, full, complete answers to his level of complicity, cooperation, and conspiracy in no less than two federal felonies, plus two more, the conspiracies themselves. I wonder where Brett Kavanaugh was today. Yeah, maybe he was working on his rotisserie baseball roster. Yeah. Lee in New York. Subject line, my September 11th stories. I was working across the street from World Trade Center that morning. When the first plane hit Tower 1, I felt a vibration and heard a muffled explosion. I went to the window and saw the fire. When Tower 2 was hit, the debris started falling against our windows. A manager announced, "We are leaving." We exited on Day Street and walked down John Street. We stopped after Gold Street. I thought it was fire, and we would go back after it was put out. When Tower 2 fell, I saw the dirt cloud rush down the street. I made the best choice. I went into a building. Years before, I had interviewed at Cantor Fitzgerald. It was on the 106th floor of Tower 1. They wanted a systems administrator. It's not my skill set. I couldn't answer most questions. One problem sounded like a bad boot sector. I was too embarrassed to answer. The interviewer said that the boot sector was failing. I will always wonder what would have happened if I offered the correct answer. Finally, I also worked in 7 World Trade Center. It was a solid building. I do not know why it fell that day. Thank you, Lee. Thank you. Randy in PA simply says, I suggest that you scan the internet for a 9/11 timeline and what Count Dicula did before, during, and after. Indeed, indeed. Here at about 27 minutes before the hour, some thank yous to send out to Libby. Thank you, Libby. That takes us down to 4:59. And thank you to Glenn, upstate New York. Takes us down to 4:49. Glenn says, 9/11, the biggest false flag in history. Power has made sure we are never told the truth. Sick fucks. Darth Cheney, Rummy, Wolf No Wits, Bush. Yeah, all of that criticism has just sort of dried up and blown away, and it won't even appear anywhere in anything resembling history in another 5 or 10 years. Well, hell, it's already gone now. Should we add, say, the 5,000-plus names of the servicemen and women whose lives were thrown away in Iraq to the list of people whose names are spoken every year at so-called Ground Zero? Should they have a separate memorial there in New York with a quote from maybe George W. Bush at the top that reads, "He tried to kill my daddy." Yeah. By the way, a little challenge coming from our buddy Ralphs. I'll contribute $25 plus $9.11. Hopefully other people will contribute at least $9.11. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very kindly. So hopefully we'll get a few of those and take things down a bit. Thank you very kindly indeed. I'll update as we go. Michael in Madison says, Trump 9/11 Shanksville. So he didn't question the passenger's heroism and say, "I like people who don't crash the plane," says Michael. Little victories. Sigh. Would anybody have been surprised if he did? Of course, you know, he said that business about, I like people who don't get captured, because John McCain had dared to criticize him. So far, the dead from Shanksville have remained, well, as silent as the tomb, so there's no need for him to engage in vituperation. James in Illinois, subject line Kissinger. Even Henry the K had the decency to take the day off of torturing puppies and attended McCain's funeral. True that. In regard to Kavanaugh's baseball tickets, James says, "I thought the tickets were intended as bribes meant to ease him onto the SCOTUS." I'm probably wrong. I don't know that you are. So it's been a day. It's been a day of memory. And they are not happy memories. It's been a day of that historian's game of what if. You know, that particular version being, what if the American people had not been screwed out of their choice for president in 2000? What if an anachronistic, old, racist mechanism had not been used to force us to have George W. Bush as president of the United States? Would Al Gore have passed off the Hart-Rudman report on the perilous state of airport security? Would he have passed that off to the head of FEMA? Quite certainly the head of FEMA, had President Gore been in office, would not have been heck of a job brownie. Would Al Gore have ignored a presidential daily briefing in August of 2001 that was titled "Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside U.S.?" Would Al Gore have said, "Fuck Saddam, he tried to kill Bush's daddy"? Would he have called Richard Clark to his office on September the 12th, 2001, and asked him to go and find a reason to attack Iraq in retribution for 9/11 when Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Gosh, I guess I'm being all partisan, aren't I? Darn. But if I'm being all partisan, I'm trying to be partisan in the name of the dead. The ones who cannot speak for themselves any longer. Whether they lost the ability to speak for themselves on September 11, 2001, in the days immediately after, or in the years immediately after. Or whether they lost the ability to speak for themselves to quote the current president, shithole country, where we decided to start a war of choice based on the petty grievances of George W. Bush, whom I still despise, who should remain unforgivable within the history of the Republic, but who now apparently has revered leader, senior sort of status. But for me, it's unforgettable and unforgivable. I was doing math. I did some math today. Jesus, it just blew my mind to think about it. 17 years have gone by. I've gone from a early middle-aged guy of 42 to a old man of 55. And I spent these 17 years largely watching our government fall apart because of a political movement that cherishes death above life, that cherishes bloodshed above peace, and a national security policy that would rather launch missiles than put a hand across a table. It's sobering, I tell you. It's sobering. Steve in New York, subject line Mark Bingham. I wonder if shitbag, that would be Trump, even knows that one of the people who fought back was a gay man, Mark Bingham. Of course, everyone knows the gays are just too sissy. Thank you for the reminder, Steve. Sobering. Sobering. Jack in Shreveport. Not far from Bush's first destination when he got aboard Air Force One in Florida. Barksdale Air Force Base. Jack says, earlier today I saw a caption on a news show on TV that said, are we safer now than on 9/11? The first thing that came to mind is that then we had a president that ignored daily briefings. Now we have a president who doesn't read them at all. Nothing funny about that, but the profundity gets a cowbell. Seems kind of like we're spiraling, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I know. James in Illinois says, wish I was still a boy of 55. it's all relative. It's all relative. Those 17 years saw our family here. Let's see. The oldest was 12 when that happened. The youngest, was 4. And like any other family that came of age in that era, our family is a family that has hardly ever known a day in which this country was not at war in the Middle East and Central Asia. Again, sobering. Again, and yeah, I will put too fine a point on this, because I am completely confident in saying that we would not be having this anniversary were it not for the operation of that godforsaken constitutional anachronism, the Electoral College. If presidents were elected by the popular vote, the World Trade Center might well still be standing. If the attack had gone on anyway, I doubt it would have resulted in a full-scale, disastrous war in Iraq. And if we have not yet figured out that it's time to get rid of that godforsaken anachronism, I guess we never will figure that out. All-around great guy Steve from Georgia Stan says, I'm so glad you're hammering home the point that Bush and his clowns have hideous amounts of blood on their hands. Not only the victims in the towers, but the countless dead Iraqis, the dead soldiers, all unnecessary. These Republican bastards, they broke it. They own it. We can never forget. Thank you, Steve. And it's a reminder. Well, you know, it's a slap in the back of the head to make us recall, because this is also the publication day. I mean, could they not have picked another day before September 11th? How about the 12th? How about the 10th? But no, by God, this is the publication date of Bob Woodward's book. A book which, based upon everything I've been able to figure out about it, is based on interviews with people like Rince Priebus and Lindsey Graham and a handful of other people. So basically, it's their account of the first 13 months of the Trump presidency. It takes a while to pull a book together. So things like the kidnapping of children, that's not in there. The Woodward book runs up through basically March of 2018. I mean, Jesus, it relies heavily on Steve Bannon. To describe what was going on in the Trump White House. I'm not attacking the book. But based on the reviews that I've been able to read, I have not read the book. I don't know when I'm going to be able to afford it. But these are so-called deep background interviews that rely on people that you wouldn't trust if you asked them what time of day it was. So maybe some of this should be taken with a grain of salt. But the other thing that goes with this is that much of what we're seeing out of, okay, Trump is sui generis when it comes to just being a dick. But the people with whom he has surrounded himself, well, those are white wing operatives from way back. Look at, consider the story of Brett Kavanaugh. That's George W. Bush's assistant White House counsel. And he's such a man of fucking principle. When he was questioned, he could not even be bothered to say that when Trump slimes all over the Supreme Court with whom he hopes to work, that it's wrong for him to do that. God damn. And long before he was hastily anointed one, because he wasn't even on the Heritage Foundation shortlist until they realized that it might be necessary to have somebody on the Supreme Court who thinks that the president is above the fucking law. But long before he was the anointed beloved of the president now, he was a, remember the term, loyal Bushy. What kind of miserable, shitty human being do you have to be to look at the grieving widows and orphans, the maimed and the suffering of September 11th, 2001, and say, well, you know, we don't want you to have more than $500,000, even if you've got bills that are in the millions. Too bad for you. This is America. We wouldn't want you to get getting too comfortable. Oh, but lay down there. My boss, President Bush, needs to climb up on your fucking back to start a war in Iraq that had nothing to do with the attacks of September 11th. That is the character of the man who hopes to ascend to the Supreme Court. And if by some miracle we were able to remove Donald Trump legally and constitutionally from office tomorrow, we would still have a hellacious problem throughout the country the day after. Because for about a third of the people of this country, we are a country that does not want to be a country anymore. We have reverted. We're a country of people who consider themselves Republicans first or Trumpers first, who at best think of themselves as Arizonans and Alabamians first before they think of themselves as Americans. Or that if they do consider themselves Americans first, well, they're Americans, but you, by God, you over there kneeling for the national anthem, you're not an American. And that problem is a far greater problem than Trumpism generally. We have a disease in this country that may prove terminal. You remember how Republicans used to get the fan tods and have to head for the fainting couch over the deficit? No more. The deficit's climbing like it's on a Saturn V rocket. Republicans don't care, because it's the right kind of deficit. It's the kind of deficit that you get if you give our betters massive tax breaks, and if you ask people who work for a living to take it in the shorts. That's a deficit that the Republicans can live with, and that hasn't a damn thing to do with Trumpism. That's some bullshit that was born in the sick, twisted mind of people like, you know, Paul Ryan, who's been jerking the gherkin to it ever since he was a kid coming out of some sick private school that thought it was wrong for people to have a dignified old age. Mitch McConnell is not a problem of Trumpism. That's a problem of Republicanism. And if we're ever going to have a country fit for the generation to which my grandchildren belong to live in, they're going to have to be brought into the light and excised from government root and branch so that they can't hurt people anymore. Checking in email-wise. Steve, in New York, subject line, on 9/11, I was in tax class in law school in Newark when I received a text message from my partner that a plane had hit the World Trade Center. I remember thinking it was a mistake or something like that. I saw a number of people walking out of the class on phones. I walked outside the hall to see the dean's secretary telling me that classes were canceled. The train to my home was closed down because it was toward New York City to get there. I remember walking around the school thinking about how surreal it was. It really seemed like something from a movie. I remember going into the student lounge and watching it on TV. Three of us, two other women, held each other and cried as the second tower collapsed. That evening, I went to stay with my partner, same partner I'm together with to this day, and we watched everything unfold on TV. The thing I remember? Seeing people jump from the tower because they were trapped in the buildings, tens of stories up. I could only wonder why someone would jump. Was it fear, desperation? Was it courage to end their lives as they saw fit? I remember seeing that too. And of course, there are no answers. David in South Carolina stands, 17 years, from a four-year-old starting her educational journey in South Carolina public 4K to a senior at Princeton University with anxiety spikes at both ends of this journey, exacerbated by incompetent POTUS at beginning and end. Exactly, David. Exactly. And you see, that magnifies it, what I just said. Because if you look out there and you contemplate the obvious wannabes for the next Republican presidential nomination, well, one of them is Mike Pencilneck Geek, who has spent a lifetime trying to torment people for how they love each other, and whose family is a massive recipient of public welfare to clean up their filthy oil and gasoline operations. Then there's Ben, different kind of Republican sassy from Nebraska. He's young. He's a kid. And he knows he can wait Trumpism out. And all he has to do is wait till, say, 2024, maybe 2020. He thinks about it about every day, if what you read is to be taken seriously. All he's got to do is wait the maggots out, and then gather them into his own bosom, and tell them, and whisper those sweet nothings that Republicans love to hear, talk of patriotism and mom and values and the sacredness of the Constitution, all the while that he's just another fiscal conservative who's out to fuck the poor. Or that freak from Arkansas, Tom Cotton. Same. Ben Sasse comes off a little bit more intelligent, and Tom Cotton doesn't try to bill himself as a different kind of Republican. Tom Cotton bills himself as the kind of hateful Republican that you've grown to love if you live down behind the cornpone curtain. And all those people that you love to watch on TV who say such witty and biting things about Donald Trump, people like Steve Schmidt. Oh, he's a sharp one. I think he's the one that referred to Marsha Blackburn, goodness, in Tennessee. He said something like, on a 0 to 10 Looney Tunes scale, she's about a 13.2. And boy, howdy, what a knee slapper that was. And he sure can talk some shit to Donald Trump. And he's got street cred because, well, he was a campaign manager for John McCain. Yeah. And during the Bush administration, he shepherded the nominations of Sammy Bad Breath Alito and John Roberts through the confirmation process in the Senate. Mm-hmm. But boy, I tell you what, we love the way he tweets, don't we? And we love it when he gets on the TV and just gives those maggots hell, don't we? There's sure enough going to be a letdown when we get a different kind of Republican and suddenly he's a Republican again, pushing the same old poisonous snake oil that he's pushed his entire life. That's going to suck a lot, isn't it? That's not going to be so funny anymore, is it? It's just reality. Hung Like Jesus with a note says, the thing that I remember about that morning is how beautiful a day it was. Oh, it was exquisite here in Appalachia. We had blue skies in Georgia that I had only seen when I was up in the Rockies. As I recall, it was even a little bit crisp here. But it was a perfect September day, unlike today. Nothing but clouds. Les, meanwhile, says, oh, yes, September 11th, 2001, the day that a Saudi and 18 of his friends tried to make America the same country that helped him economically bleed out the USSR. Oh, wait, no, I'm getting this wrong. He's talking about bin Laden. The day that a Saudi and his friends tried to make America the same country that helped him economically bleed out the USSR using American-made weapons also bleed out economically the same way. He failed, and he's dead now. But the man from the top levels of his former enemy's government will now complete bin Laden's mission for him, while also using an AmeriClan-made weapon. Now, let's see here. I got one more message hiding in here somewhere. Oh, well, thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Old man, my left foot, you're a spry 55-year-old man. Ask the Viking warrior Pharaoh princess. Let's don't say we didn't. Bless her heart, she lies convincingly, though. She says things like, honey, you're so handsome. Scott, meanwhile, in San Diego, says, here's my different kind of Republican, Bob. Unelected or not reelected? Well, we've got the unelected variety right now. That seems to be a trend over the last 17 years or so. Is there... that's a question. Would it be a fitting memorial to the victims of September 11th, and by that I mean the people who died at Ground Zero in New York, the people who died in Washington, D.C., the people who died in Shanksville, P.A., the people who died of disease, and the million or so Iraqi civilians who died, would it be a fitting memorial to them if we got the fuck rid of the Electoral College so that the people who engage in the levels of neglect necessary for 9/11s to happen don't get into office anymore? Me, I think that would be a fitting memorial. Feels like it would be. So that's a start to the program. We've still got a challenge on the table, courtesy of Ralph's. Thank you, Ralph's. Looking for some $9.11 contributions. And Ralph's will match those up to $34.11. So anybody wanting to jump in, it would be helpful because we've got $449 to go in fundraising, and it's hard to keep a radio network going with bills like that piling up and receipts like that not coming in. All help is good help. You don't have to, oh, God, Bob, I can't help you. I don't have $449. You don't need to. This is the power of a lot of people doing a lot with a little. That's why I constantly talk about $5 subscribers, $10 subscribers. That's what keeps this program going. So there we are. Let's take a break for the Green News Report, shall we? And Conversation Radio for this Titanic Tuesday. And what a Titanic Tuesday it is. We'll continue. You know the numbers, 304-574-8178 and 844-843-4676, that last toll-free, 844-THE-HORN. That gets you in on one line. Skype comes in on that same line, Bob Kincaid Horn. But we have a separate line. It's not Skype. It's phone number, 304-640-2829, 304-640-2829. And that's the stress line, named for the inimitable Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. You can use that too. And we'll get ourselves a little conversation radio going, assuming that you want to. Otherwise, it's a Titanic Tuesday filibobster. Okay? Okay. We'll be back. I'm Bob.
September 11, 2018.
I have already ordered the mandatory evacuation of all people in all of the evacuation zones.
Powerful Hurricane Florence takes aim at the U.S. East Coast.
Tropical storm watch is in effect for a good portion of Hawaii.
While Hawaii braces for its second major storm in 2 weeks. Brand new pipeline explodes in Pennsylvania, plus...
This bill and the executive order that I'm going to sign will put California on a path to the goals to meet the Paris Agreement and beyond.
California blazes a new path of action to fight climate change.
All of those paths and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and... snarky comment.
Look at the size of this thing.
No need to brag, Ali Velshi. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, well, last week we hit 900 Green News Reports. So this week, it seems, the climate is doubling down on us.
Yeah, nature seems kind of mad. Several states have declared states of emergency ahead of Hurricane Florence, which is on track for a direct hit along the U.S. East Coast as a potentially catastrophic Category 4 storm, fueled by extremely warm Atlantic Ocean waters. South Carolina's Governor Henry McMaster on Monday urged coastal residents to please heed mandatory evacuation orders while they still can.
We do not want to risk one South Carolina life in this hurricane.
Hurricane Florence is packing dangerous storm surge and high winds, but forecasters warn it may stall in place, potentially dumping Hurricane Harvey levels of rainfall, triggering record inland flooding. AP reports that in Florence's potential flood zone are 6 nuclear power plants, toxic coal ash waste ponds, and hundreds of massive open-pit hog manure lagoons.
All of which, if the amount of rain that is now predicted to come in, could flood, could get into the water supply. This is a very scary situation.
On the other side of the world, in the Pacific, Hawaii Governor David Ige has declared a state of emergency for the second time in 2 weeks in advance of Tropical Storm Olivia, Hawaii's second big storm impact in those 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, Hawaii saw the second largest rainfall event on record in the United States caused by Hurricane Lane, which was second only to Hurricane Harvey 1 year ago. The increase in frequency and intensity of extreme weather events is in line with climate scientists' predictions for what we would expect with global warming.
You know, it would be nice if the scientists got it wrong every now and again these days.
In Pennsylvania, an underground natural gas pipeline exploded before dawn on Monday, destroying a home, two garages, and several cars, plus overhead power lines, knocking out power to 1,500 residents. No injuries or deaths have been reported, thankfully, and no cause has yet been determined. The new pipeline went online only 1 week ago.
Brand new pipeline, one of these pipelines they tell us, oh, we're using brand new technology. Nothing to worry about here. Apparently, there's a whole lot to worry about here.
But some good news, some pipeline accountability in California, where a jury has found Texas-based Plains All American Pipeline Company guilty on felony criminal charges in a major oil pipeline spill in 2015 that fouled beaches and killed marine life and birds near Santa Barbara. Also in California, in a rebuke to the Trump administration's efforts to expand offshore drilling, Democratic Governor Jerry Brown has signed two state bills permanently blocking all new federal drilling for oil and gas in state waters and barring any expansion of existing oil and gas infrastructure that would ship offshore oil and gas across to state lands.
But that's not even the biggest good news coming out of California.
No, it is not. On Monday, Governor Brown also signed the landmark SB 100, legally committing the state to meeting the target of 100% carbon-free electricity by 2045. Now, that is a huge deal all on its own, but in a surprise move, Brown went even further, signing an executive order requiring the entire state, the world's fifth largest economy, to become 100% carbon neutral by 2045, covering all emissions, including cars, and then moving to negative carbon emissions after 2045. It is the most ambitious goal of any government in the world. In a press conference, Brown said California is committed to transitioning to clean energy and meeting the targets of the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement and beyond.
It's not going to be easy, and it will not be immediate, but it must be done. California is committed to doing whatever is necessary to meet the existential threat of climate change. And yes, it is an existential threat. No matter what the naysayers may say, it is a real present danger to California and to the people of the world.
When Donald Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement, Jerry Brown said, okay, we'll take the lead out here in California. Looks like he's trying to make good on that promise. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. My thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us celebrate our 900th episode of the Green News Report. If you haven't done so already, it's not too late. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Well, that certainly does make for a nice segue into Hurricane Florence news. I guess we can start with the madness of last night. I don't know how former Liquor Supply Officer Marion Robertson is going to play this one. If Hurricane Florence slaps the bejesus out of the North Carolina coast, well, that's a little bit south of it coming ashore right on top of his properties at Virginia Beach, so maybe he'll claim a win. On the other hand, it looks like there's still going to be a lot of rain with, wherever, all the way from Virginia Beach to the South Carolina-North Carolina line, with roughly Wilmington, North Carolina, smack dab in the crosshairs. By the way, I mentioned at the top of the program the ubiquity of different ways of finding the horn. I just found out from our buddy Tony in Texas. That's how he spells it, T-E-X-A-S-S. He said, holy crap, I just listened to an hour of your 2017 show. Okay, you're live now. You sound just fine. Thank you. And I don't know how that works. Someday I'm going to have to sort it out. Okay, so, apparently that's not it. And I'm not going to save this or anything because it's current and it's immediate. But when one of these hucksters gets going on what appears to be a good racket, others are bound to follow suit. Enter some awful woman named Kat Kerr, K-A-T-K-E-R-R. Thank God her last name's not Kincaid.
Florence, right now, we're speaking to Florence. It's already out there, okay? They've already named it as a hurricane. So we're going to take authority over Florence, and we say you will become nothing. You will not do destruction. And I can't answer that right now, but I might later. You will not do destruction to land or to people or property. And we command the millibars to rise, rise, rise in Florence. You rise, millibars.
Rise, you millibars.
You dissipate that storm. You get it downgraded, downgraded, downgraded. And we thank you, host of heaven. We send you into the midst of that storm right now because we took power over all the power of the enemy, driving it, sending it, increasing it to be destructive. And we speak against all that the enemy thinks he's going to do with it. And we command the host of heaven, you get in there, you begin to shred the bands. Those bands, you see them, that's what causes that spiral effect in the storm.
Mm-hmm.
It creates bands.
Really,
some
bands.
Some become outer bands. And then the ones closer to the center are the wind.
There's bands in the hurricane. I mean, the scorpions are in the hurricane. And Neil Young's in the hurricane. And, I mean, the Crazy Horse, too, probably. And, I mean, there's bands in the hurricane. Bob Dylan's probably in the hurricane. Bands. Yeah, bands.
Stronger there. So when we command the host to shred these bands, they literally will cut them up.
Dude, I love it when the bands start shredding. I love shredding, dude.
All right? Like you cut your pretzels up or your bread up. It really does happen. And so I just want to give you that visual.
Wait. I neglected to do something here at the beginning of the program. The Titanic Tuesday shtick. Because Titanic Tuesday is all about the movement of the Titanic plates. And, well, no word yet on the movement of the Titanic pretzel cutter? Pretzel cutter? I love me some kitchen gadgets, but a pretzel cutter? Okay, Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. You want to get to work on this? Don't send a pretzel cutter. Don't send me a pretzel cutter, but really, there's such an animal? A pretzel cutter? For shredding bands?
We can do destruction to the plans of the enemy. And then the bands begin to separate and dissipate, and the storm gets weaker. So we declare that over Florence, it's going to become weaker and weaker. It will be downgraded.
Yeah, no. No. It's moving slowly enough that it actually could kind of get all up to those millibars could fall, not rise, and it could make it to Cat 5. Christians. But did you notice that hurricanes are an effect of the enemy? And the enemy is another word for the devil. Yeah, I got to work on the reverb. And when I say the devil, I don't mean Hillary Clinton in this instance. I mean the devil. You know, the horns, the tail, the cloven hooves. Well, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. There's our pretzel cutter. Now, not that I go around looking for this kind of stuff, but if you look at your weather patterns and you look at the way hurricanes form, you know where they start, don't you? Yep. Africa. Just the same place evolution comes from. Devil lives there. You know, they got lots of witches and warlocks over there in the country of Africa. You never have to look far with these wild-eyed, white-winged evangelicals before you can get to the sort of racist core of their preaching. Have a little more Cat Kerr on me.
Going to address Florence first. That is, of course, off of the East Coast. It's still out in the Atlantic, okay? But they're...
Yeah, this is... Okay, the other clip was before this clip, and she took power and she shredded the bands, but it kept on coming, so she had to come back and... Right.
Forecasting, it will hit... It'll make a turn to the west and northwest, and it's going to hit somewhere in North Carolina, they're saying. South Carolina, they're still not sure. We're saying it's not going to do that, all right? We're not going to agree with any of the forecasts they're giving for that storm.
By the way, just to give you a little video color commentary, Christian evangelical prophet Cat Kerr here is, and I kid you not, wearing a Marvin Martian shirt. That Marvin Martian. The one with the Alerting Q32 exploding space modulator. Delays. Yeah, that Marvin Martian. With the disintegrating pistol that actually disintegrates people, whereas Daffy Duck's disintegrating pistol just disintegrates. I can't see, she's got it covered up with a sweater, so I can't see if Marvin's actually nailed to a cross or anything. But she's... Cat! You prophet, you. Go ye like Jonah and get into a boat. And steer thy boat smack dab into the hurricane, and then tell the hurricane to turn. Lay hands upon the hurricane, Cat. Never mind the same... Oh, wait, she doesn't live anywhere near this stuff, does she? Probably not.
The categories it's going to get to, the damage it's going to do, the flooding it's going to do, it's almost like they're calling it. We aren't calling it. We are crushing it. If you remember, I'm sure...
Crushing it.
Christ stopped the storm. He actually was trying to teach his disciples how to do that. Why? Because we are calling those things that be not as though they were. This is not something we're making up. This is not a game. We are serious about doing this. So if you're serious about stopping these things from happening, then get on board with the Weather Warriors, because we're not going to stop doing this. So right now, we're going to speak to Florence. The first thing I always do is hit it in the eye. Why? I like to do that, but it...
Yeah, she likes to hit it in the eye. Ooh, me without the tequila bottle, son of a gun. But the best part, apart from the Marvin Martian t-shirt, is the fact that she's got a piece of paper in her hand, and she's got the, because she had to script this out, because you got to say it just right, or the enemy won't hear it, and God won't put the, God won't put the mojo behind it, that, oh dear.
Does have an effect in the spirit realm. We're taking spiritual authority over a natural situation, which Christ did all the time, and we are joint heirs. I don't have time to go into that. Look at some of the prior forecasts, and I'm going to let you know right now. So we take authority over Florence, and we say, you will not grow. You will not hit land. You will not do destructive things to America or anywhere.
Now, look, we're having our fun here. This woman is nuttier than a Christmas fruitcake. That's fairly obvious. But here's the problem. The folks who pay attention to your Pat Robertsons and your Kat Kerrs are not the sharpest knives in the drawer in their own right. And I don't say that to demean them or to make fun of them. But this woman is actually posing a clear and present danger to the simple-minded. Simon Simple and Simon Pure. So, let's say Governor Henry McMaster down there in South Carolina stand, like we heard on the Green News Report, says, did you catch him there? We have ordered everybody to evacuate who is within the evacuation zone. Good on you, Gov. Well, who are you going to believe? Governor Henry McMaster? Or a woman who speaks with the power of prophecy and Jesus? And if she says, sit tight, well, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want to be meeting my maker having ignored a command to sit through a hurricane, even if that hurricane kills my ass and sends me off to heaven. Yes, sir, I believed you, Jesus. I was right. Praise Jesus, I'm here at the throne of glory because I listened to Kat Kerr and I don't have to put up the hurricanes anymore. Well, that too. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, again, a little color commentary on the video aspect. You gotta love the prophet Kat Kerr's pink hair. Makes me take her even more seriously. Pink. I know some denominations that would probably have her burned at the stake for that pink hair, but, well, that's on them. Jesus God. Meanwhile, Arnold simply asks, where are you finding the stupidest of stupid people? I envy your ability to find these pits of ignorance. Hey, Arnold, somebody's got to do it, buddy. But we're not done with the stupid yet.
Well, I need to be repeating this, okay? You need to get on board and say it too. Don't just say you agree. You say it.
We have to say her words with her or else it's our fault. Oh, my God. Wow! Oh, what? The beauty of the racket. It's on the simpletons. They're not saying it right. Holy smokes. Robert in Australia says, hello, I'm God. All-seeing, all-knowing. And you think I'm just sitting here waiting for you humans to command me to do things for you? God helps those who help themselves. You wrecked your planet, you fix it. I'm not coming to save you, even if I existed. I do kind of like the idea of the voice of God being, an Aussie, but... True. You broke it. You fix it. Mm-hmm. Lee in New York. Remember this from a public policy polling poll? 31% of Trump supporters actually support building an Atlantic Ocean wall to keep Muslims out. Would a wall in the Atlantic keep out only Muslims, or would it keep out hurricanes as well? Atlantic wall. I think Atlantic wall appears somewhere else in our fairly recent history, but I'm funny that way. I can't possibly remember. And yes, there's a pretzel cutter. Son of a gun. Pretzel cookie cutter. Asa found it. Lee asked, is the pretzel cutter what George W. forgot to use when he choked on a pretzel? Well, he probably should be. Should have had his pretzels cut up for him. James in Illinois, in regard to the pretzel cutter, says, you don't have one? Every civilized kitchen has at least one pretzel cutter. It's only logical. Ooh, what? I got that pretzel logic. Pretzel logic? Ooh, wait a minute. Ah, très clever. Yes. Meanwhile, Randy in PA says, and when Florence crushes the Outer Banks, it's going to be God works in mysterious ways. And, you know, I just found this really awesome little hotel right there on the point of Cape Hatteras. And I was hoping to sneak off there at some point. I hope it's still there. Selfish on my part, I know. By the way, a lot of the people who are dealing with Florence right now have no idea what's going on. The population of that area has increased by some 25% since Hurricane Hugo. And so there's a lot of people, because storms really don't hit there that often. The Gulf Coast takes a beating. Just, I guess, because the waters are warmer and it gets sucked into the Gulf and it churns around and then bounces around like a fucking pinball. But, yeah, a lot of people who live in that area don't have a clue. And evacuation, evacuation from somewhere like the Outer Banks, not fun. Not a lot of four-lane superhighways going into the Outer Banks. I was watching earlier this morning, it was NBC, they had a live stand-up from one of their reporters, can't remember her name, and some guy, some old white guy who was even more terrifyingly white than I am, his head was shaved and everything, had a something looked like maybe a t-shirt wrapped around his neck, maybe it was a towel or something, came up to be interviewed because, well, you got to interview the locals, and no, I wasn't here for Hugo, but, well, thank you, sir. Thank you very kindly, she said. And he said, can I just say one more thing? Reporters hate that. And she said, okay. And he said, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament sheweth his handiwork. God is great. So I'm guessing he's not evacuating, and he's not filling any sandbags, and he's not putting any boards over his window, because... well, you know, God. And remember, you got to say it with her. If you don't, it's your fault if Florence destroys the Carolina coast.
Your words have power. So I will say it again slower so you can say it with me.
Oh, good. Slowly.
As a member of the body of Christ, I have authority over the storms.
Uh-huh.
And right now, I take authority over Florence, over any of the demonic army controlling it, empowering it, and steering it.
I think she's making this up. She's making this deliberately difficult so she can blame the people for not saying it right. And what if there aren't any demons in the hurricane? What if that's an angelic hurricane? What if that's a hurricane sent by God to punish the people of South and North Carolina for, oh, I don't know, voting for Trump? I mean, this witchcraft shit is open to interpretation, isn't it? I mean, I don't want to. Can't tempt fate, goddammit. That's more witchcraft. But I don't see this thing bearing down on any Hillary states. Did Hillary carry North Carolina? It's all run together after a while. Yeah, what if, yeah. What if God is sending the hurricane to punish North Carolina for trying to disenfranchise African American voters? Because the Republican legislature of North Carolina repeatedly did that. Ron and Raleigh could probably give us chapter and verse on all of that. Or what if God's sending the hurricane to punish people who deny climate change that human beings have caused in contravention of the will of the Almighty? No, she's not. Brother Deacon Asa says, wait a second, Kerr? Florence? This lady's not your second cousin or nothing, right? No. This crazy, I would claim. I would. I would. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I say, no, you do not have authority over the weather, but we do as joint heirs with Christ. He said, what I do, you will do also, and greater works will you do. This is what we're doing. And then we will say, I command the millibars, the pressure, to rise in Florence. You rise, you rise. You rise and you crush that storm. It will be diminished and downgraded.
Wait a minute. Okay, obligatory Star Trek reference. She just pounded her fist into her palm three times like she was calling the angel Melvin Belli. It all begins to make sense after a while. No, it doesn't. Lee with an obligatory Star Trek reference of his own. From the episode Court Martial, Trump would spell it Court Martial, M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L. Kirk was to blame for Lieutenant Commander Finney dying when the pod was jettisoned during a simple yellow alert. So obviously people die in storms because of people, not storms. Yeah, but now Lee's writing me another Star Trek reference because of the... With the fist into the... Wasn't that the one with Melvin Belli? And that maybe they didn't use the palm. They just, with the kind of the way Trump fist pumped there in Shanksville today.
We will not tolerate any violent activity or threatening activity in our country or anywhere we declare it.
Unless it's caused by firearms, in which case, well, you know, Jesus wants that violent activity. She's a real Lulu. Among other things, she claimed that her prayer prevented Hurricane Lane from striking Hawaii. But then again, that didn't work out so well. She took authority over the California wildfires, and they kept burning. Mm-hmm. And yet she's standing right, but she says the meteorologists will be baffled. The hurricane won't do anything, and yeah. But then, if nothing happens, of course, it's everybody else's fault for saying it wrong. Well, it makes me wonder. Randy in PA says, when I heard the last name of Kerr, K-E-R-R, I thought of the galloping gourmet, Graham Kerr. I wonder if she's kinfolks. There's another job for the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Wowzer. Nonetheless, if you are within reach of the storm, please take emergency precautions, and please take the emergency management officials seriously, because you don't want to wind up like Puerto Rico. Not that Puerto Rico didn't take things seriously, but no, as a matter of fact, today, Julius Geezer was asked about Puerto Rico in light of the, yes, it was, and the children shall lead. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, friendly angel come to me. Thank you. Thank you, Marty. Hail, hail, fire and snow, call the angel, we will go, far away, far to sea, friendly angel, come to me. And yes, that was Melvin Belli, one of the first great celebrity trial lawyers. No, the realities of Hurricane Maria, well, they are horrifying. 3,000 people dead from Maria. Most of them were poor and or old. And included people who were directly impacted and people who even committed suicide from the despair of it all. The report's been out for a couple of weeks now. The report's real. George Washington University's Milken Institute of Public Health reviewed from September 2017 through February 2018. There was a 60% greater risk of dying for those living in the poorest areas of Puerto Rico, 35% higher for male Puerto Ricans aged 65 or older. And the risk went on even after the study was closed. So there's no way that you can do anything but look at Maria and understand that it was an epic failure of government to give even the remotest of fucks. Okay. And the horror is inexpressible in something as impoverished as words. And so, lo and behold, today, somebody asked Julius Geezer about it. He was trying to reassure people in South Carolina and North Carolina and Virginia that everything was going to be A-OK after Florence hit. Apparently, nobody told him about Cat Kerr and former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson either. And he said, I think the response in Puerto Rico was incredibly successful. I actually think it was one of the best jobs that's ever been done with respect to what this is all about. Puerto Rico got hit, not with one hurricane, but with two. This prompted Carmen Yulin Cruz, the mayor of San Juan, to say, Trump simply does not get it. Thus, his neglect towards Puerto Rico cost about 3,000 lives. Unfortunately, it seems he will never get it. Well, no, Madam Mayor, he'll get it if the folks that he thinks need the help are white English speakers. Because in the final analysis, we must always remember that simplest of statements, but that most profound of statements, Donald Trump is a white supremacist. Apparently, people who heard his remarks were shocked, were stunned. He said that it was an incredible unsung success. I mean, that's today. That is by way of reassuring people in South Carolina, North Carolina, and Virginia that he will not let Puerto Rico happen. It's only one hurricane. It's just one Category 4 hurricane. Look, we did a great job over in Texas. Where's Kanye West when you need him to say that Donald Trump don't care about Puerto Rican people? 3,000 people dead. Roughly the same number as died on this day 17 years ago. And in both instances, to one degree or another, preventable. Randy with an update. North Carolina State Route 12 is a two-lane road, one way in each direction, and that's the only major road that runs north-south through the Outer Banks. I know it well. Okay, I don't know it well, but I've been there. That's what I mean when I say evacuation is a challenge. John writes, maybe God's a social democrat? I'm sorry, this is Scary Jerry. Not to cut into your prayer meeting Wednesday, but all the hurricanes that have been Cat 3 or better in at least the last 100 years that have made U.S. landfall have come under Republicans. Check it out. 1926 storm, Labor Day storm. Donna, I think Nixon. Andrew, Bush 1. Katrina, Wilma, Rita, Bush 1. Irma, Maria, Harvey. Standoff the Orange. Standoff. Wait a minute. Florence is going to be bad. Magical thinking will get you the sweet by and by. But objectively speaking, does seem like Yahweh gets Old Testamentish when Republicans rule. Something punishment and retribution. I love the way Scary Jerry quotes him some scripture. Something punishment and retribution. Okay, yeah, thank you. Jason says, no, it was a fist pump. We're just sussing out that Star Trek episode. It happens around here. You'll have that. So 3,000 people died, and Julius Geezer says it was an unsung success. Well, I guess it is if you're into, like, eugenics or something. Jesus, the evil of it all. Breathtaking, isn't it? It's definitely a Titanic Tuesday. And a reminder, if you would like to engage in some conversation this evening, that's why we do the program live, so folks can participate. Also because I hate working in a recorded métier. Live is fun. Live is immediate. You have to live with your mistakes when you're live versus when... you can stop and hit cut and go back and say, yeah, say it this time, Bob, without saying booger, will you? Right. But the lines are open, 304-574-8178 and toll free, 844-843-4676. And the stress line, 304-640-2829. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype gets you in. And, well, it makes everything possible. I'm fretting about, well, geography is geography, but I'm worried about our friends down in the Carolinas. Everybody from Todd and Clarence to Ron and Raleigh and John and Bob and Albert and even more. So, for Christ's sakes, okay, that's probably the wrong term. For reason's sake, don't be listening to the Cat Kerrs and the Marion Robertsons, okay? Please? Pretty please? Well, I think I must have just conjured Todd. Hey, Todd, are you there? Yeah, there you are.
Am I here?
Yeah, you're there.
I tried to call Bill's line, but apparently, maybe I didn't program it onto my phone correctly, because that's the second time. I know I wrote it down wrong the first time, but whatever. I tried to do it.
304-640-2829.
I think I wrote 9 instead of 4. I have to fix that. Okay.
Okay.
So, listen. I just wanted to get
right to the heart of the matter. Are you going to have to bug out?
That's exactly where I was going. I don't know yet, but I'm telling you right now, like, you know, the best thing about the South, right, is the front porch. Right? When you have that type of house, that's like, that's the place to be. So, I was out here on the front porch where you ate and everything. And, the barometric pressure, I can feel it. I'm very sensitive. It just doesn't feel something. It doesn't feel right. We had this downpour about half an hour ago, and I have these totes that you put your stuff in. You can, you know, it has a lid on it and you can store things in it, right? Big tote. So I use that as a container, and also I put certain plants in it. So I'm not trying to get too deep in this. Anyway, it's empty, so I can tell how much rain has fallen because it's empty.
Yeah,
we had 3 inches of rain in about 20 minutes. I mean, I had to go out and empty it because it was going to overflow. And I don't want the yard to flood yet. But I'm on it. We're on the hill. But I'm just telling. So, you know, I think we're in a band. You know, B-A-N-D. We're in a band now. It looks like it. But this damn thing, I'm telling you. And yesterday was weird. I mean, it was like hot. And usually in the summertime, yeah, it's still summer here, you know. It's still, you don't have a breeze and it's hot. That's just weird. You know, and the clouds, I wish I had taken some pictures. And even right now, this shit is not good. I don't think any good can come of this. I really don't. I don't see any good coming of this at all. And I feel bad for folks. Let's see, 2 years ago, well, twice I've been to a place called New Bern in North Carolina. And it's like, if you imagine what the Chesapeake Bay is, it's kind of situated like that, where it's kind of inland, but it has all these little tributaries around it. So I'm really concerned about New Bern because it looks like the storm is moving a little bit northwest. So it may not be that bad for us, but it's going to be the flooding. You know,
the non-hurricane from what was it, a couple of years ago? It was football season.
Right, Floyd. That's exactly what I'm concerned. Like over in Forest Acres,
it just parked, right?
Parked, and I mean, listen, these folks have nice houses and retention ponds and shit. And man, when all that stuff breaks, and you know, humans do natural things. I mean, we blow roads where creeks are, where Indians used to walk. That's just the way shit works. Because it works. That's where the trail is, right? A trail turns into a road. Blah blah blah. And if you notice things, you see that. So they built all these roads in this nice subdivision on the outskirts of the capital city, and there's a big floodplain running right through it. And it took 2 years for them to get back on their feet. I'm not feeling good about this at all. It looks like smoke in the sky right now. There's no water to be had. And there was no bottled water today.
Have you got a set aside?
I have. Yeah, I always keep some, but you know, I was just shocked. There was none, and I hadn't been over to the double store yet because I really don't want to go over there. But I'll get up early tomorrow and scout around, and if I have to go there, I will.
Might be smarter to go west instead of east.
I think you're correct. Yeah. Well. And I have a couple places to go if we have to get out of here, because if it sits, that's a lot of damn. I could, the words, what I'm saying now, you could feel it. Something bad. This thing is 1,000 miles away from us, where I'm sitting right now, and I can feel the shit. Like, the insects, all the birds are gone. The insects are gone. Look, I saw a little bird. He has little bags packed. I was like, damn, you can fly. You got little suitcases. Damn. It's just crazy.
And the other thing that needs to be brought into this, and this is going to sound a little bit, maybe this will come across as kind of shitty at the time, but reality is always reality, no matter what time it is. And that is that South Carolina and North Carolina, and generally speaking, the southern states, they are takers. To use the term,
you really want to start with that for real?
Well, no. What I'm talking about is the only way that there's any infrastructure in South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, whatever, is because the federal government pays for it.
Well, that's the truth. They can't figure out. They don't like taxes, so they can't fix the road. They have to.
Right.
They argue. It's awful. And the road. At one point, the roads. When I used to visit the road. At one point, let me see. When I used to come down in the 80s. Somehow they had just finished doing – the roads were wonderful. It was beautiful. But they never did anything since then. Listen, we had bridges collapsing by the – there's a bridge going down to whatchamacallit, down to the lake – what is it? Lake Marion in Somerville. They had to shut – somebody died. The thing just decayed. Because remember, they don't like regulation, and they don't like
– And your regulation, that would be paying somebody whose job is to go around and make sure the bridges are safe.
Can we go off on a tangent for 1 second?
You go anywhere you want to.
I'm just saying, people love to, we hear these folks, you know what I'm talking about, and they always say, they freed up the regulation. We have to start questioning people. Okay, that's a very nebulous term. That means a lot of, what exactly are you talking about? Because there's certain regulations that you might think are going to help the economy, but maybe in the long run it's going to be a strain on the health care system, like with these microparticulates. There's a reason we have damn rules.
Sure, and you want to look at Cletus and say, right, let me see if I got this. You're proud because the government is now going to let people poison your water, and you're happy about that. You're a proud Republican because corporations are going to get to poison your air that you breathe, and you're happy about that. You want deregulation, so that means that corporations are going to be able to, mop fresh meat in shit, and you're going to wind up with at best a $500,000 insurance bill for being treated for E. coli, and somehow that makes you feel better about America? The fuck is wrong with you?
Excuse me, Mr. Host. You just hit on a nerve there. You hit on a root canal. Now, is it me, or has it been an unprecedented rash of salmonella, E. coli, and other types of bacteria in our food lately? Even in shit like snack crackers. Jesus. Have you noticed all these recalls?
Yes.
Recalls lately?
And it happens.
And they're talking about rolling back regulation? What the fuck is your problem? I'm sorry.
No. You're exactly right, because I've got the stories day after day after day after day. Seems like there's one a week sometimes.
One a week.
And the thing is, anytime E. coli pops up, that means your food has been allowed to come in contact with shit.
Who? Yep. That's all that is. There's no way you can get around that. That's what E. coli is. That's
and, when you can't keep the fresh packed chunks of watermelon away from the shit... Well, it would seem that your corporate capitalism's a little out of whack. But maybe that's just me.
No, it's not. And see, this is a discussion. Excuse me. That's a discussion that needs to be had, because anybody who's listened to Tom Hartman in the past few years, he's really been harping on that fact that, at one point, when we were in our heyday, the tax rate was 90% for corporations, and everybody was fine, because they, you have to have some boundaries.
Yeah, but the CEOs couldn't afford 24-karat gold commodes. Come on, man.
And what kind of free market is that when Betsy DeVos's family can only have 8 yachts instead of 10? Why don't you love America, Todd?
Look, I love America. See the other side as much. I don't know if you noticed that, but I really do try to understand the other point of view.
No, I did.
Because I feel like it makes you a more powerful debater, number one, and it increases the knowledge base. But,
Can you imagine what it would be like if those people building those goddamn BMWs down there in Spartanburg, if they were being paid $30 an hour instead of 13 or 15? Can you imagine what an economic multiplier that would be inside that community?
Listen, but they've been brainwashed for so long, you know, and that's why a lot of these folks came down here, these small factories.
I was boiling peanuts for... But now I got me a $13 an hour job.
Well, you know, come on, man. This whole anti-union thing. These ignorant people are just easily manipulated because we would not have. And I know it's like I don't have to. It's stating the obvious for us, you know. But this is what made the middle class. And you know what? And I'll give a little bit. I'll say, okay, maybe the union's got a little bit greedy at near the end. Maybe. But I will say this, and I remember this. There's no way anybody can dissuade me from this because I was paying attention. When Reagan came in and we were in that recession, he said, look, we're all going to have to take some cuts and bite the bullet, but it's going to be better in the long run. And the workers' wages have never risen from that. When you account for what a dollar is worth and all that, we've never gained. And then now we got these $10 little towns in America. The best these young people can hope for is working at the Walmart for 10, maybe 12 to get a raise. You can't. What can fucking you? Nobody can live on that. That's bullshit. You know, that is ridiculous. But that's where we are. And if this nonsense keeps going on, we'll be in a $5 economy. Because remember, capitalism, what it looks like is that we've started to eat ourselves. You know, we don't have colonies anymore, so we're basically colonizing our
right. The other part of it is, under Republican rule, we've seen the free market at its very best or worst. And look. People, and this is a little bit tangential, so just bear with me, please, Todd.
No.
I'm sick to goddamn death of hearing the orangutan babble on about what a miracle he's created in the economy. And, yes, Barack Obama was correct to point out that it started under his watch. But if we are brutally honest... This $5, $10 economy, this 20-hour-a-week work economy, this you-can't-get-a-full-time job economy happened when corporate America threw a fucking fit because the Affordable Care Act was passed, and so nobody could have full-time work anymore because corporate America didn't want their workers to be able to go to the goddamn doctor when they were sick.
Exactly.
And so as a consequence of that... You wind up where we are, but then secondarily, it proves the fact that if you leave corporations to just behave in regard to their shareholders and their boards of directors and their CEOs and their COOs and their CFOs and the see me a hoes and whatever, they don't give a damn about the people who make them the money. So you have to have regulation to compel them. To pretend to give a fuck. I mean, is that fair? If you said no part-time employment, I'm just off the top of my head here. If you said the bulk of your workforce must be, say, let's say 2/3 of your workforce must be full-time work.
Now, see, that's reasonable.
You know, that leaves leaves room for the kid who wants an after school job, what have you. Or the person who's
Steve,
just trying to...
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because you're, wait a minute, you're focused on the bell ringer right here. Well, that's not the right term, bell ringer. But yeah, on Sam's, you know, Sam's outfit, Mr. Old Sam, right?
Yeah.
Walmart. Because...
But McDonald's, Wendy's, a pharmacy tech at CVS or Walgreens. Now, this is somebody whose job...
Oh,
this is somebody whose job is to get the right bottle of stuff that can kill your ass off the shelf, count it out, make sure you're reading the illegible scribble of the doctor correctly, put it in a bottle, label it, and get it to the right person. That person is getting minimum fucking wage and can't get full-time work. Well, part of the way you become expert in what you do is by doing it regularly and routinely over a considerable period of time.
And maybe you should be rewarded for that so that you can guide other people to use your work ethic and bring them along.
Right. So let's say you're a part-time pharmacy tech at Walgreens.
By the way, I like this scenario. I just want to put that out there because that is very important.
And the other part of the time, because you've still got a family to feed and rent to pay and coal-fried power to pay for. So your other job is, let's say you're a bartender. Well, you're not going to be very good at making margaritas or filling scripts for Cipro, because you don't get enough time to do that, and you don't get the consistency. Because, see, on Monday and Tuesday, you're a pharmacy tech, and on Thursday, you're a pharmacy tech, but on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, and Sunday, you're a bartender.
You're describing a terrible scenario, because you know what happens. You got to clean up, and you're up late, and you don't get home till you can't go to sleep till, what, 3:30.
And we've got examples from film. Because everything's got a movie reference, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
You remember how Mr. Gower slapped George Bailey in the ear and made him deaf? Because Mr. Gower was all upset and drunked up because his boy just got killed in the war. And young George Bailey kept him from poisoning somebody to death. But when George Bailey was gone and had never existed, Mr. Gower killed that little baby or that little girl or whatever, and he went to the joint.
Stop. That movie makes me cry, man. Come on, stop.
Well, I mean, but so it's within a fantasy setting, but Frank Capra, because of the socialist that he was, Frank Capra was describing an American reality. Not within the terms of you've never been born before, but in the fact that the tiniest little thing in an economy in capitalism can have a ripple effect across the pond that's the size of a goddamned ocean. And you know what? If the part-time pharmacy tech winds up giving somebody with, say, a morphine allergy a loading dose of morphine instead of giving them their vedolizumab for their for whatever drug that makes your nose slide off, and they die, you know what the lawyers for Walgreens are going to do? They're going to blame the part-time worker who was up with a sick baby till 4 o'clock in the morning and had to be at work at 6. That's what they're going to do.
You know what? I don't know what's on your mind, but I'm going to tell you, you just presented a very cogent and concise example of the problem and something that I can identify with, because now I'm around a lot of old people. You know, I'm not on any prescriptions, but I have to go to the drugstore for folks all the time. And I have no idea. These folks, I see this one woman in there, and I swear she is worn out. I don't know what this woman does, but every time I go in there, these people are like gerbils. They're trying to move.
Well, for 10 hours a day, you don't get to sit down.
Listen, it's amazing we're not all dropping dead, because I'm thinking, You know, all it takes is the wrong. Just it's so easy to mess. It's so much can go wrong with that. So this is my point. Like, think about these patented medicines that we see advertised. They make a lot, because people have to have it, a lot of money.
And so, then there's the gig economy. Then there's the gig economy, Todd. What about the Uber and the Lyft drivers? And what, you know, and that's regulated from state to state. What kind of bottle to throttle rule do they have? What kind of, you'd kind of like to have regulation in a situation like that, you know, unless you just like taking your life in your hands every time you get in a car, which, you know, you always do, but you get the idea.
Right. But you got me back to something I wanted to hit on, is that it's not like we don't hate capitalism. It's just that capitalism, and once again, back to where, I'm not going to say his name again, but if you play Monopoly, right, one person ends up with everything. And that's not how we thrive. And look, it's just like, and I'm all about, and this is one thing Republicans always tout, and I'm with it. Like, give small businesses a break. Because they do get, they create jobs in the community, and you never know that they might be on to something. You know, give them a break for a few years. I have no problem with that. That way they can compete with larger businesses, because look at these mergers we're having now. We are right back to the robber baron ages with these mergers and acquisitions. I mean,
Look at the $150,000 that Donald Trump stole from small businesses just because he had to grift a little, he had to get his beak wet in the aftermath of 9/11 with the economic recovery funds. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. We need to keep talking about that, because that is an insight into his mindset. And see, the reason he wants the wall is that he's going to get, he's all about, you got to think through Donald Trump. He's all about the skin. He wants a piece of everything, because he's been hanging around with the gangsters. He's a gangster.
Yeah. He wants his VIG.
He wants his VIG. Nothing, if anything is moving, it's the shakedown. I'm telling you, he's shaking these people down with this tariff. Are you kidding me? That's what he's doing. He's like, I'm going to get this tariff. And then he'll send somebody around, you know, to go to his hotel and spend some nights in his rooms, you know. But you know what? I'm feeling good about these new folks coming in until they get corrupted. That's what we have to watch out for, is the corruption.
Between the corruption and the active neglect, you've got various and sundry recipes for disaster. I just got a note from Steve from North Carolina, another member of the fraternity of Steve, I might add. I live just north of Raleigh. We just went camping near Hatteras, and Highway 12, which Randy mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Highway 12 flooded from a day of rain. Just a day of rain. I'd hate to see it after this monster of a hurricane. On another note, what about all the hog lagoons and coal ash dump sites flood? What about that are down east? They'll be dealing with the aftermath of that for years. See, there's a place called Tar Heel, North Carolina. No, it really exists. And the thing that Tar Heel, North Carolina is noteworthy for is a massive Smithfield Meats killing operation.
Oh, God.
Where they do, I can't remember the number exactly. I may be exaggerating it. It's years ago that we were talking about it. But back then, the assembly line ran like something like 32,000 hogs a day. And
wow.
women, many of them Hispanic or black, stand there and just slash these hogs.
And all that blood runs out.
And the guts fall out, and the guts go in the lagoon. Let's see, it's 8:13 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I'm ruining dinner in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone right now. And the reason the story was being covered way back when was because the workers were treated like shit. And horrible, horrible injuries, terrible work safety records. But the fact of the matter is, the feces, the urine, the guts, everything that isn't being that's not being, you know, recycled for consumption, goes into those goddamn lagoons. And Stephen, North Carolina, is right, Todd. When those things get overtopped, it's going to be a nightmare. And when the coal ash gets overtopped,
right?
Yeah. And see,
that's
Duke,
what I was just thinking about.
Duke Power.
The first time I learned about that.
Yeah, Duke Power in North Carolina has spent millions of dollars owning the government to keep from having to take proper care of those coal ash dams.
You know, you guys are on track to get hit, right?
Oh, here, yeah. And
I
and,
mean, that's what it does.
And if massive, it parks and pours. See, we had some nasty-ass flooding a couple of years ago. But anytime you get one of these massive rains, well, wherever they've destroyed the mountains, there's nothing to soak up the rain anymore.
Right. That's just runoff, and it comes down, and that's it.
But the other thing that goes with it is in southern West, and it's mostly in southern West Virginia, but in the entire state, we got about 100... dams that are made out of nothing but dirt and rock. And they hold back billions of gallons of toxic waste. The largest the largest dam in the world, as the crow flies, is about 20 miles from me.
You're kidding me.
No. It's bigger than Hoover Dam.
You just said, no, but wait a minute. You just said the largest dam in the world.
Okay, the largest dam in the Western Hemisphere.
Well, that's still pretty profound.
Bigger than Hoover Dam.
Well, that's pretty damn big.
And it holds back
Wait a minute. Is that part of the TVA? Is that
No. This is something that's privately owned and maintained by a coal company, and it holds back about 9 billion gallons of toxic waste.
You're fucking kidding me.
I have to tell this story every
that's
now and
crazy.
Then. You know, I'm not saying somebody else get rained on. Please stay away from West Virginia. I'm saying.
Wait a minute. It's just because I'll be. Let me just wait. If you haven't seen those little hillsides, decades of shit or a century of shit, nothing will grow there, and it's just barren. It's all you see is like the river and these barren like hillsides. Because. You know,
yeah, I mean they'll grow non-native grasses, but not much else.
People don't believe it till they see it, and it's like you see how people.
Well, look, get on Google Earth and look up Brushy Fork Impoundment. It's 9 billion gallons of toxic waste behind an earth and rock dam that is bigger than Hoover Dam.
Not even a real dam, like a berm.
And that's that's just one of 100. Okay?
Most of them
leak. And in the case of the Brushy Fork Impoundment, get this. It's built on top, you know, what's underneath it, what all the toxic waste is sitting on, this artificial lake, this sea, is undermined. It's been coal mined, okay? There's nothing but pillars left. It's full of water. Old coal mines fill up with water. It's full of water. That water is pressing. It can't come up because it's got 9 billion gallons of toxic waste going down on it. And so the hillsides have been that the dam is built between, they've been mined too, and they've been blasted on top of for mountaintop removal.
Does anybody live below that?
It's about 2 miles to the Head Start Center and the state police barracks. Not even 2 miles.
That ain't nothing.
And the engineering reports say that when that thing blows, a wall of toxic waste somewhere between 40 and 60 feet high is going to roar down the Coal River Valley all the way to the Kanawha River in St. Albans.
And then it's going to mess the river.
And there is not a single structure in the path of that disaster that is 40 to 60 feet high.
It doesn't matter. With the pressure, 12 feet, you know, water has a lot of weight behind it.
Yeah, and so, what I'm getting at, though, is that when a storm system comes to southern West Virginia and parks and rains and rains and rains and rains, there's a risk of those dams overtopping, because it's not like they've got a spillway where you can relieve the pressure by letting the toxic waste out into the stream.
Right.
Because it's toxic waste, not water.
Right.
There's no flood control on this shit.
Well, see, that's the...
And if the dam overtop...
That's crazy.
If the dam's overtop, then it's game over. All of this happened.
I hate when you bring this up. Man.
All of this happened once in 1972 at a place called Buffalo Creek, and that was only a few tens of millions, not billions, of gallons of toxic waste. And it killed hundreds and displaced thousands. And so, I can't imagine what it would be like to sit through 12, 14 hours of just relentless 120, 140 mile an hour winds. My sister and brother-in-law have told me about it, and they tell you, and they've told me about, after about hour number two, you think you're going to lose your mind. Because it just won't stop. The noise is like nothing you've ever heard.
That's what we're getting ready to have.
And so I can't even pretend to comprehend that. But my heart goes out. But for where I live, if that thing parks and dumps a couple of feet of rain on us, one of these days, and see, this isn't, Todd, this isn't something, it's kind of like what I was talking about at the beginning of the program with nobody knows about the equally as many people who have died in Appalachia from particulates. You know, nope.
I heard you say that.
We don't exist.
The microparticulates.
But, you know, we've done activism, and we've protested, and we've begged, and we've pleaded, and we've told people what, I mean, it's the law of averages, for Christ's sakes. And one of these fuckers is going to overtop and go. And even if it's just a little baby one that's only got 2 billion gallons in it, it's going to be hell on earth.
You know, you remember, because that's why you brought it up. But I remember the first time that I was listening to you and you brought it up, and I just couldn't get it. I couldn't process that. I'm like, well, wait a minute. How is that legal, you know, regulation-wise, to have a retaining pond full of toxic, you know, toxic shit, knowing that it just gets more toxic the longer it sits there, because, you know, that's just what happens. You know, it just gets more potent. You know, it starts to dry out, then more water comes in, and you know, it's unbelievable. So we're back to regulation again. That is just unbelievable. They have to figure out something else to do with that. You know,
look, and you know, Steve mentioned the coal ash dumps. Again, to repeat.
Oh, again, the Duke Power, man, they got that massive motherfucker. Oh,
well, they've got a bunch of them. And these are dams that are made out of toxic coal ash, and you have to understand what coal ash is, okay? Because of the Clean Air Act, we couldn't just send coal toxins into the air anymore. So they had to be caught, and there were scrubbers, and
right.
Theoretically, a lot of it had to be stopped from going into the air because of acid rain.
No.
So then you just dump it. And it goes into a pond,
that's what they
so
did,
it'll
they
settle.
They didn't want to build that expensive tower, right, to get the particulates out.
Well, that's cool. The ones that look like a nuke plant, those are just cooling towers.
No, there's something. I'm talking about the one that uses static electricity, and it makes the particulate fall to the bottom.
Oh yeah, and then you take the, but you got to understand what's in the coal ash. Now we are.
Can be good.
we are, if not famous, at least noted for our conversations about our barbecuing prowess, Todd. And one of the things, if you got a good smoker, one of the things you got to do is be extra careful to clean out your ash pan, or you won't have a smoker anymore after a while, because that shit gets wet and it turns into, oh God,
it's acid.
Hydrochloric acid or sulfuric acid or something like that. H2SO4. And it'll eat through your smoker. So you got to scrub that shit out.
Acid.
Well, when you take coal ash, it's got arsenic, lead, mercury, cadmium, barium, uranium, It's just a laundry list of the heavy metals portion of the periodic table, and it's super concentrated. So, like, 8-9 years ago, when that one coal ash dam gave way in Tennessee and sent ashbergs floating down the, what was it, the Clinch River and the Tennessee River? And then the TVA gathered up what they could of it, and they dumped it on a tiny poverty community of color down in Alabama. The county started with a P, I think. And then, lo and behold, everybody down there by the dump getting sick.
Oh, my God.
Well, this, you know, when we think of hurricanes, we think in terms of, oh, yeah, let's get everybody out of there. But we don't think so much about the infrastructure that can't evacuate. And so because of sketchy regulation schemes, and because of Republicans who campaign on, we're going to get the government out of the way so we can have some economy and some jobs. Well, the outgrowth of that are these massive lagoons of hog filth and chicken filth and coal filth.
I don't know.
And the hurricane comes, and it gets kind of indiscriminate. And the engineers, you know, engineers are paid to design these things. And they're like, well, you know, I mean, we can design it to withstand a Cat 3, but it's going to cost you another couple of million dollars to make it withstand a Cat 4. And the chief financial officer says, well, you know, the shareholders will never tolerate that harumph.
Right. And they say, well, how often does that Cat 3 come through, and how often does the Cat 4 come through?
Right, and that's where the concept of, like, 500-year storms come from. Only the problem is 500-year storms are now 15-year storms because climate change is real.
That's where we started. Where I'm talking about, now, this is a richy neighborhood I was talking about on the outskirts of the capital city here. And I mean, where the ladies used to get their nice dresses and all that crap was flooded, man, everything. They're just getting back on their feet. And there's no... These are a whole bunch of private berms and dams. I'll never forget when you really explained to me, because I was just like, this can't be right. When you told me about these retaining ponds with this coal, this sludge, and the coal, it's incredulous. It makes no sense. I mean, it just makes no sense. Especially, you're in the mountains with that good, pure water. I mean,
that's the part that really makes you want to eat dirt and run rabbits.
You know, I've been wanting to bring this up. Here's my tangent. And this is something everybody can relate to. It's about soap. Now, anyone who has learned to backpack, they know what Dr. Bronner's liquid pure Castile soap is, right? Everybody knows what that is. Who's backpacked? If you don't, raise your hand. Okay, I don't see any hands.
Yeah, no hands.
All right, no hands. Okay, so that's great. It's wonderful. You know, you can brush, you know, that's why you use it to backpack. But there's a solid cake, and it's called Kirk's Pure Castile Cocoa. It's made out of, like, cocoa oil or something, but it's all natural. No animal fat or anything. You know, it's pure Castile soap. But this soap, you just touch it. You just get it wet. You don't want to hold it under the water at all. No. You just touch your face with it or whatever, man. And I mean, when you shave, you get this, like, circa 1922 thick lather, like you're in a barbershop in Brooklyn. I mean, this shit is, it gets into your pores. Other soaps, they just fuck around. It's just bullshit. It's just fucking, it's perpetrating a fraud. It ain't nothing. This soap is unfucking believable. And I mean, it will get that. We all love the grill smell, but, you know, it comes a time. You gotta go, you know. You gotta do things. You can't go out smelling like a damn girl. So, one swipe, that's it. That Kirk's, and I hate to do these product placements, but I'm telling you.
Well, it's unpaid, so it's okay.
Have you ever used this soap I'm talking about?
No, I just wrote it down. I gotta go find it.
It is sold at Big Latte, Big Lots.
Big latte. Wait a minute. Hold on. Time out. Yeah. It's the accent aigu that makes it fancy.
Wait. Oh, man. Well, you know, come on, man. That, in these small towns, you might, you know, you just, you, it's a surprise. You, they have really good high-end little hors d'oeuvres. And, you know, you have to look at the date and all that. But they have these pickled vegetables from Poland. And,
oh, dude, I just ran across a recipe. Now there we were talking about all these ecological and environmental disasters, but you said the magic word. You said pickle. I just ran across a recipe, and it's from the guy who is the brains behind a chain of breakfast joints coming to South Carolina soon, I might add.
Uh-oh.
Called Big Bad Breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And wow. I can't. This is going to happen. They opened one in my hometown, and that's where I had that. That's where I had that mind-bending tomato gravy on a big old cathead biscuit.
In Alabama.
Yeah, but it started in. It started in Oxpatch, Mississippi, there where Ole Miss is.
Uh huh. That's a college town.
Cool. Oh yeah. I'm looking for it now.
Well, that's I knew you were going to get it pulled up. Yeah. Oh man, there's so much. Yeah, we've been eating good food right here. That homemade pita bread. That's the, you know, the beauty of that is watching it bubble up. It draws in and it bubbles up, and it's amazing. You make that pita bread from scratch.
This comes from this guy at. Big Bad Breakfast.
Uh-huh.
Pickled grapes.
Pickled grapes?
Pickled grapes.
Grapes are sweet. That sounds interesting.
I found the recipe at Esquire. Chef John Currence, C-U-R-R-E-N-C-E. He's the brains behind Big Bad Breakfast. He's a James Beard Award winner and all that stuff.
And oh, my.
And he said, the article says he's a pickling fiend, something he attributes to his grandmother. I was designing a lamb shoulder dish and trying to think of something sweet and tart to finish it. For some reason, I remembered my grandmother's pickled plums, and it occurred to me that perhaps grapes would work just as well. They retain all their natural flavor and pick up the bite of the vinegar.
Right.
And then they give you a 2-quart recipe, grapes, cider vinegar, sugar, brown sugar, white wine, coriander seeds crushed, mustard seeds toasted, ground cinnamon, cloves, salt, and fresh ginger peeled and sliced, and jalapenos diced.
Damn!
And the thing is, once they're done, they're done. And if you make the recipe and stick it in the refrigerator the night before, they will be thoroughly pickled by the time you put the feed bag on with your barbecue or whatever the next night.
Overnight, baby.
But I saw those and I thought of you.
That sounds wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And assuming everything after the storm and everything, but when Big Bad Breakfast gets to South Carolina, wherever it is that they park, you're going to want to make a trip. It's that good.
And that's
a new trend happening. I don't know if it's nationwide, but I saw it in the South. Places that are breakfast joints, you know, they're shut down by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And they specialize in making breakfast dishes that are, you know, I mean, it's not Bob Evans stuff.
No, I tell you, I think that's everywhere. Because right before I moved, there was a place in my neighborhood like that. And they would buy, you know, they'd be shut down before 12:30. You know, you'd come in early in the morning and drink coffee. And I
found a small chain in New Orleans that was that way called the Ruby Slipper. And then, lo and behold, up in northwest Alabama, I found Big Bad Breakfast, and whoa. And that tomato gravy. I did a tasting platter, and they were more than happy to cooperate. I said, I can't. I said, you got sausage gravy, red eye gravy, and tomato gravy, and I got to pick one? They went, we know. I said, so bring me the biscuits and just three little ramekins, you know, just a taster of each.
Mm-hmm.
And they went, got it. And that tomato gravy was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Man, that sounds...
And see, we got to mix in a little happy. You got to mix in a little.
No, I was always happy.
With the disaster, you know, the condemned ate heartily.
Listen, I've already talked with the neighbors already because I have a gas stove, and I think a lot of folks have electric come around here. So I give out some candles already, and I was like, well, you know, because the power goes out when people sneeze, so you know the power will go out for a little while. You know that. This is about how long will it be out. And it made me think about your new... I'm surprised that you even do a show anymore because with your cooking apparatus. I mean, let me ask you this. Did you hear, it must have been about 2 months ago, maybe 3 months, A Splendid Table. It's like a cooking show.
Yeah, I catch it every now and then.
Okay, well...
it's a fun show.
It is. And, you know, sometimes the radio's on or whatever, and it's like, wow, that's interesting. So the guy was talking about, I forget his name, but he was talking about four things that are good to eat or whatever, blah, 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 that he grew up with. And one of them was egg fried rice. And that got me to do it at home. And I was like, wow. And it just so happened I had a whole pot of rice from the night before. And, you know, I got the Asian stuff like fish sauce and ginger. Because I think ginger, you need something Asian to really make it right. If that's how you want it to taste. But, you know, and the peas, that's the key ingredient. You got to have, like, some really...
Yeah, I was just testing out the rig, so I didn't get to get as fancy as I wanted to because I didn't know if it was going to work. Next time it'll work, but...
It'll work, man. And you know what? Were you like this? Like, damn, if I had known it was going to be this good, I should have been doing this all the time. Did you get that feeling?
Todd, it was gone. It was gone by the end of breakfast the next day.
You see?
I took those flat iron steaks. I marinated them overnight in teriyaki sauce with some stuff I threw in extra.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rice, like I said, I couldn't find the rice I wanted, so I just used jasmine rice.
That's perfect. That's even better, really, in a way.
And you know, soy sauce and butter and garlic. And what I was doing was I was trying to replicate in my head what I watched the chef do at the Japanese joint.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I was pleasantly surprised because, you know, we all of us have had the egg fried rice at the takeout.
Oh, and that was the funnest part was cracking that egg on there and scrambling it right there. You know, I didn't scramble it first and then pour it on. Just crack it on like the Japanese chef does, scramble it with a fork on the griddle, then mash it up into little bits, throw the rice and the peas and the carrots on it, hit it with the soy sauce, and then, you know, hit it with a little water a little bit later to let it steam, put a metal cover over it for a little bit. You saw the picture.
I did, and I said, my God, that looks like egg fried. I was like, because it's been on my mind. I'm telling you, ever since I did that, I do it every once in a while now. Because what I was trying to say is, like, we all have had this stuff when you go out, but when you make it at home fresh, oh my God, it's so much better. It's so much better. And this chef on a Splendid Table, there's a certain sequence, and well, anyway, I did it exactly the way he said, and I mean it. It turned. Oh my. You know what I'm saying? It's like, where's this been up? Why have I not been doing this? That's all I'm trying to say.
Oh no, I get it. By the way, you just got a little fan mail from our buddy Tom in the Bay Area. Subject line: Kirk's Castile. Ha ha! I just put a fresh bar of Kirk's in my shower yesterday, next to the bottle of Dr. Bronner's. That's my shampoo.
Ha ha! Thank you. All right.
This community. See? This community.
That is beautiful. See, he knows, man. I'm telling you, this soap is no joke, man. Honest to God, you shave. I mean, wow. And, it's no. And I mean, it's like, Oh, man.
Yeah, and see, I'm going to get off the air here and just hungry. Because I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The fried rice over at the OK Chinese restaurant.
That's fucking crazy.
It's just OK.
You're telling you. Don't expect too much over here. Now, look, it's going to cost you $6.95.
Yeah. I mean, why not make it the Diminished Expectations Chinese restaurant?
Don't
get your hopes up Chinese buffet.
No fortune cookie here.
Ain't no peanut. Ain't gonna be no pineapple and green pepper and onion in your sweet and sour chicken Chinese restaurant.
Oh, speaking of that, I have to say this. We're on the food. Oh my God! So I got to. You know, I'm not gonna say their name until I call them. I'm serious, man. We're gonna have to get some money from them. So TJ, that's all I'm gonna say. I'm assuming you like the pad thai, right, with the red curry sauce.
Yeah, a lot.
I mean. Yeah.
The thing is, every day except Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays, I can get it fresh about 5 miles down the road here.
Wow.
And she started doing Thai breakfast, and I haven't gotten over there for it yet. But that's got to be good.
That's worth going.
Yeah, her chicken Penang curry will make your eyebrows sweat, and it's good.
Hmm. How much yuzu you have left?
Say what?
Yuzu.
Oh, how much of that? I'm under half a bottle now. It's getting worrisome. Did you hear me? I just
somebody might send you a bottle.
You hear that?
Mm-hmm. I heard it.
Yeah.
What? That's why I brought it up. So right beneath in my Trader Joe's that I'm
tasty.
See. And that's good for your gallbladder. I'm telling you, it cleans the gallbladder out.
Oh, I'd drink that.
I believe that.
I would. I, if it wouldn't completely take my breath away, I'd drink that through a straw. You know what? I want to. I have plans to make a big pot of gumbo out on the gas grill now.
Oh shit!
And some of that is going in.
Damn.
Mm. By the way, now that we've got another thing going on, name Bob's Chinese restaurant. Will in Chicago says. Bob, how about the Strive for Mediocrity Chinese restaurant? And, you know, and by the way, there's another rule out there, Todd. If you eat sushi at the Chinese buffet, it's on you.
Don't blame anybody else when you're in the bathroom.
I mean, if there's 100 pieces of sushi sitting out and been there for about 4 or 5 hours at the Chinese buffet and you go, sushi, it's on you.
You know, there's a movie about that, because then you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there's a worm trying to escape through your navel.
Yeah, right. Right. It's on you.
It's on you. Oh, my God. Wow. Oh, listen, you know what? I can't get over this thing. So much food to talk about, but... But I don't know. The podcast is out there of that splendid table because.
Well, I'm gonna have to look it up and check it out because I'm sure I screwed up. But
I'm saying, like, he's in other words, this guy, you know, he's a chef and he grew up on, you know, he grew up poor in the Philippines, and this was like his mainstay. And I said, okay, I cook, you know, I said, usually I just do my thing, but I'm like, I'm gonna just do exactly the way he said it. And you're supposed to bank the rice to one side, and then put. He said it has to be quick, real fast. You put the egg down on the side of the rice, and like you're making an omelet. And as soon as it bubbles up, then you mix it up. But he said the secret is to prep everything first because it has to be really fast. I mean that's what he said. So that's what I took my biggest skillet out. But anyway, you get a second, you pull up the podcast because I didn't. Taste the same. And you would think You know, but cooking's like chemistry. It's about.
Well, it's all. That's all it is. That's like with these cast iron griddle grates I've got. There's two of them. They're separate. They've got a wall between the two, so you don't have all that space to work with.
There's a wall. That's beautiful.
So you know you can use the griddle on one side and use like the frame for a pot
this
or a saucepan or whatever.
This is the last show. Bob is no longer doing his program.
No. But one thing I was thinking about doing is those cast iron grates are porcelain coated, kind of like a Le Creuset. You know how Le Creuset is porcelain coated?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm thinking it may, you know, that's, you know, I got to get the long spatula thing, but I'm thinking, you know,
you need a bamboo spatula for that.
Those really really paper thin Asian cuisine pancakes that are almost like crepes.
Yeah.
You know, you fold and you put with the stuff and you, all I got to do is have it quit raining and give me a couple of, you know, because that's the other thing. I'm battling a little depression, Todd, because it's not like I'm in South Carolina. We're going to be freezing our asses off before we know it. And I know the people in Wisconsin and Chicago and Michigan are going, oh, fuck you, Bob. We're already freezing. But it's, you know.
Look, man, the geese are out here.
I remember how hateful it was on New Year's Day when I was out there and it was 11 degrees below zero pulling that brisket off. Damn.
I remember that. I remember you were talking about that.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I need to do something.
And you were looking at it. You were like, damn, how long do I have to stand out there? Because it's cold as shit in the winter.
I mean, the gear held up. I was warm as toast and everything, but if you pulled the gloves off, shit got real, real fast.
Quit. Frostbite is no joke.
No, it is absolutely not. And you don't want to splash any, like, hot meat drippings or anything on your frozen-ass hands.
Oh, God, stop it. Woo!
Yeah.
Man, that's the first thing you learn when you were a kid and you get that real quick. Just like don't.
And so I've got, you know, I got a pair of silicone gloves that come about halfway up my forearm, and they're good for picking up stuff that's up to like 400 degrees.
Man, you do not. Are you fucking serious? Excuse me. Are you serious?
Yeah.
You got this professional. Oh, you got the pull. You can pull pork with those. That's what's up.
No, I'm getting the bear claws for those as soon as I can afford them. Have you seen those, the bear claws?
No, I haven't, but I know what you're talking about.
They look like bear claws, and you grab them. They're like brass knuckles for pulled pork. And they got these long claws, and you just, you know, you grasp and like your fist, you know, like brass knuckles, and you just, and you tear at the pork with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're nylon, hypoallergenic, easy to clean, all that kind of stuff. Let me check in real quick just to let folks know where we are fundraising-wise because I got some thanks to send out.
Okay.
By the way, David in South Carolina updated us on the storm. Storm shifted south, will be flooded, bridges, dams never repaired because of tax cuts and Repiglick and government. My outside cats are getting nervous. It's downright eerie here. He's not that far from you.
No. See what I'm saying? That's what I'm eerie. That's the right word. That's what I'm saying about the barometric pressure.
Let me check here. First of all, Ralph's challenge got met, and that's a
beautiful,
happy thing. Ralph's challenge got met by let me see here. By Samson. So thank you, Samson, for meeting Ralph's challenge. That took us down to 375. And then Libby jumped in with 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Being born in 1945, seen it all, progressive always, but for a brief anarchist period back in the day, nothing spoke more clearly about this country than 9/11, the Iraqi War, Afghanistan, and the elections. It's so obvious now that the plan for the downfall of the United States and its people is and has been for decades in a steep fall to fascism, oligarchy, and ultimately totalitarianism in the interests of the deep state and Russia, China, and whoever holds ill will, which is practically everybody, to fill their coffers, however long before this may happen, the environment will collapse on us all. So my cynicism runs deep and have no faith and hope in any major changes, maybe politically, and fear it's too late. Just saying, on years of informed, intuitive, bigger picture, which is all the talent I have, great show, and so with you. Thank you, Libby. So that takes us down to, because of the ciphering and everything, I'm not going to, so we're going to call that, we're down to 366. And then Colin out in Illinois took us down to 316. I'm guessing that might be our buddy in the chat room. A donation in honor of the late Jerry Janko, a Democrat and music teacher and member of my synagogue from Northwest Indiana, who can no longer vote, donate, or work for good causes. Now, in keeping with the themes of the High Holy Days, it is time to look at our flaws and resolve to build a better world. It is up to us. That, and it'll annoy the Trumpers like small-minded individuals. I'm spoiled. I can go to Chicago's Chinatown. So thank you very, very kindly. We took a big bite out of it. We're down to $316 to go, and that will...
That's a good start.
It is. I mean, I can pay a bill tonight.
And it is Rosh Hashanah.
Yes, I know. I noticed, and I love that idea of taking time and taking seriously the idea of forgiveness and redemption. And if I understand the theology correctly, what comes with it is you don't get forgiven automatically. You got to go and you got to seek it, and you got to explain why it is you got stuff wrong. Maybe I'm
Lord, does that not seem applicable right now? Oh my God!
Yeah, I mean, can it, you know? I can't imagine what it must be like. To be Javanka and trying to deal with Rosh Hashanah. You know, where do you start? I mean, take a number.
I'm almost there.
I like that idea of having to seek forgiveness from others instead of saying, "Forgive me, Jesus." Well, okay, I'm forgiven now. Good for me, you know, said Charles Manson.
No, forgive the people. Ask forgiveness from the people that you have slighted, that you have hurt, that you might even think you have hurt. It's about self-reflection. See, that's exactly what the problem with you-know-who right now is, that because he's such a sociopath, the contriteness is not in there. He cannot. If you ever look at him when he tries to apologize, he actually looks like he's in physical pain. It's unbelievable.
Way back when I was in New York back last February, I had this magnificent opportunity to go and look at some ancient books, beautifully illuminated books from the medieval period. And they were books of hours. And... H-O-U-R-S. And they had these magnificent displays of medieval life.
You mean like those flat pictures without perspective where they just show kind of...
Yeah, and I mean, they showed the reaper bringing in the hay and the butcher with the hogs and all of that. And the seasons, and you know, it was all about how they told time in the Middle Ages. That's what the exhibit was.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of hell was apparently sufficient back then, because you had a universal church that had sort of, you know, this is before the schisms and before all the corruption got completely out of hand, and it was also before the plague. And so it was sufficient to kind of keep people in line. But when people, when the marauders came back from the Crusades, and they had had a taste of how much fun raping and pillaging was, because it was open season on Muslims over there, they decided they'd like to, well, you know, why quit a good thing just because you're home? And then the plague comes along. But what I was getting at is back then, the idea of hell might have been sufficient to keep a largely uneducated populace honest. Well, it's obviously not anymore.
No.
You know, Julius Geezer plays to the evangelical simpletons, but he wouldn't pee on their Jesus if he was on fire. But by the way, I got a cowbell to give out here. This is going out to Sparky, who has also folded space to become Man Cave.
Bitcoin.
MAGA Trump rally, Outer Banks, North Carolina, September 12th to 15th, 2018. Assault rifle raffle. Come show your Trump. Come show Trump your love. Free hats to the first 10,000 maggots.
That's not real.
No, but it should be.
I mean, it could be, but I'm just.
Well, I'm waiting for one of those evangelicals to stand out on the goddamn beach and, you know, and tell, halt! The power of Christ compels you. And Trump.
Well, listen, the Washington Journal folk, they will tell you straight out that, you know, God sent Donald Trump to us, and God bless Donald Trump. And they mean that shit. Oh, they mean it. So, they mean that, you know. For right now, I'm more concerned about the Supreme Court justice right now. It's so obvious that he's a perjurer and he's a slime ball. And he is exactly what he looks like, a piece of shit. He is just...
Well, the thing is, he's a bigger scumbag coming out of his hearings than he was going in.
That's what I mean, come on. We don't have to have this guy.
What kind of fuck-ups were Shepard... You know, and Don McGahn was shepherding his confirmation process...
Do you want to bring that asshole up? Because I'm going to tell you about that motherfucker. Let's look back.
Did you say, wait, one thing. Did you say,
motherfuckers just like Kelly. Go ahead.
Maybe it happens all the time, but did you see, because it was like there and it was gone. You know, Kavanaugh was sitting there, because he's a serious jurisprudence judgy. And so he's sitting there dutifully taking notes there in front of the panel, just like it's fucking 1L, and he's learning, he's in his first fucking torts class. And then, all of a sudden, it's like, boom, it was like it's just that quick. He rips it off, he folds it up, and he passes the note behind him to Don McGahn.
Just like that.
I guess that happens. I guess you can do that, but it's like, hey, passing notes in class, are we? Well, Don, why don't you stand up and read it to all of us?
Judge Kavanaugh, would you care to read that note that you just had?
Did you bring enough gum for everybody, Brett?
How many lies has this guy been caught in?
Well, there's at least 4 instances of perjury.
I'm not comfortable with this at all. I'm really not. I understand the rule. They learned the they work the system, they held that position open. That's what they can do. Fine, but not this person. This person is so outwardly, number one, he was only picked because of his outlandish stance that the president has these unyielding powers.
Right,
and it's pretty fucking obvious. Then on top of that, the lies, come on, man, Look what Sotomayor went through. Every fucking thing. Her fucking diary from when she was in 7th grade. They looked at that. Come on, man. This is bull. Hey, look at him. He's a fucking... He's a colon catcher, man. I don't trust him.
No, and again, the fact that he was only added at the last minute speaks volumes. But the thing that got me about the note passing to McGahn, Todd, is McGahn is White House counsel. He's not Brett Kavanaugh's counsel. He's not even Donald Trump's counsel. He's White House counsel. What the hell?
Shit, you're right.
What the hell is Brett Kavanaugh passing him notes about?
That's a foul.
And meanwhile, that weirdo Zina Bash, who decides that since she got called out for making a white power symbol on her arm, that she's going to troll the world, so she just stands there holding up that to the camera? What?
Now, that was that woman who ushered out, who took the place to the plaid shirt.
Yeah, same woman. Same woman whose husband had a photograph taken of him with a bunch of paramilitary right-wing militia assholes giving the same symbol, the same gang sign.
Man.
You know, not to get all patriarchal or anything, but I don't like stylized theater. I don't like theater where you have to move in a set fashion and recite the lines in a certain way because that's how it's always been done. And that's what these confirmation processes have become, because this is not always what they were, Todd. Once upon a time, it was a bunch of old asshole white men sitting around, probably got the jug out, pulled the corncob stopper out of it, and they really did pass the jug and ask questions about how people felt about the law. And sometimes it didn't even come to that.
All right.
But now it's this. Goddamn circus comes to town when you don't. When no matter what you learn about the nominee, it's not going to change the vote. Then why have the hearing? The guy got stone cold busted on 4 counts of perjury.
Mm. I mean,
he got busted for receiving stolen property. Do you have any idea? Do you have any idea how many people are in prisons all over America on a charge of receiving stolen property?
Look,
a lot.
If people could not understand what Dick Durbin was saying, I mean, he laid that shit out like a lawyer, like an attorney. Like, okay, this is what we have. Here's the evidence. You know, which by the second day compelled him to say that I was born at night, but not last night, because he was like, look, man, we're trying to be professional here, but you're just a lying piece of shit. Now, stop. Just go, you know. Look, man, we understand they're going to get their judge, but not this guy. Not him.
Well, I think this process should be shut down. And not allowed.
He doesn't deserve to kick anybody in the first fucking. He's a fucking sub. He's a criminal suspect.
Unindicted co-conspirator.
And his attorney general is a fucking criminal. He's going down too, and his son is going down. And look, I mentioned this before. I don't see how he's not, because remember, somewhere along the way, this must have been 2 months ago. And the documents are on C-SPAN. The Mueller released the evidence to show that they had ongoing surveillance, telecommunications surveillance on Donald Trump Jr. And in Trump Tower, because every time, you know, they have to re-up on the application. It's not ongoing. They have to show evidence that needs to be ongoing. And it just kept getting more and more and more. And they have a whole packet, and it's all in PDF. Anybody can look at it. And it's got the emails, it's got the associated things in the paper. And it's like, oh, well, this was true. And here's the emails, is what they said. And he was like, yeah, we want, and see, this is this guy named Goldstone, Glass Goldstone, I think. And that was the intermediary. And remember, Butina, remember we talked last time, Butina and Barr's,
yeah, it turns out she's going to cool her heels for a little while longer because... it turns out, yeah, the court said she's a flight risk, so no.
Well, and you know what's interesting about this woman is that if we remember after the Helsinki, whatever you want to call it.
Fiasco?
That's a very good word. That was one of the bargains. Putin wanted her back. Remember when he was talking about he wanted to send his people over here and he would help us look at our, you know, help us, you know. Look at our surveillance things and this and that, our security, and he wanted her back in exchange. So this thing, she's the key to this. She's one of the keys to this merge between the evangelical right wing, the NRA, the GOP, and this white nationalist movement. Because, you know, they're all in alignment. You know, they all have a lot in common. And, you know, and this fear is brown hordes, you know, it really doesn't matter, because the power elite, they're going to be the same for another couple hundred years. That's not going to change. So it's all a bunch of bullshit. You know, they're frightened about nothing. You know, so what? It'll be more brown people. The system is still there. It won't matter. The system is still there. And that's what we have to focus on.
Well, exactly. Well, we got to get out of here because we're a little past the hour, but it's been a great conversation. And again, keep in touch. And listen, all y'all, okay, because that's how we talk, all y'all, North Carolina, Virginia, South Carolina, if you're coastal, inland, what have you, keep in touch, because this is a little family community congregation, and we do worry about each other. Just check in safe as the storm makes its way, and I wouldn't really put much stock in Pat Robertson or Kat Kerr. I won't speak for Todd, but I wouldn't, or just wouldn't. Make sure you got plenty of water. Make sure you can eat and stay out of the weather. And just know that we're thinking of you, and know that that we care, because you are part of a community. This is not an audience. This is a community. Todd, thanks a bunch, buddy. And you and the folks you help care for, y'all stay safe, okay?
Thanks, Bob. I always enjoy the conversation.
It's always a pleasure. That's our buddy Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. And let's see, we got it. We knocked it down to $316. Maybe it'll come down some more overnight. Thanks to all our subscribers. Thanks to everybody who jumped in this evening. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Man Cave this evening in the chat room. Hope you're feeling better, Steve, from Georgia Stan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live, sender of food porn pictures extraordinaire, you merciless bastard. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.